Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Is that the fucking fax machine?
Yes.
Jesus Christ. What is this? This is Bush League.
An office or something?
Welcome to another edition of Soundwaves from the Underground. I'm JP, and this is the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and we're one of the oldest independent publications in the United States. We distribute free monthly issues about music, arts, action, sports, and subculture. We also feature regular columns on food and beer and tons of other local stuff. Special thanks this week to Skullcandy Headphones. They're a local company. They make a great product that is now known nationally. I'm currently wearing one of their headphones. Thank you for sending them to us, guys. We really appreciate the product. Check out more information online at skullcandy.com. And a special thanks to Rob Lair for sending them to us. This week's episode, we're going to feature music from Danger Hailstorm and find out about the man behind the band. We'll be learning about Wasatch Community Gardens training series. We'll also be listening to a new track from Andre Williams and hearing about the soul, R&B, and the music legend's history and his future. Also in this episode, you may be hearing a few noises in the background. That's us building our new podcast studio. We're quite excited about that. Pardon our dust. We are under construction. Danger Hailstorm are a hard rock trio from Salt Lake City. The group formed back in 2008, led by former guitarist for The Stench and Magstatic, Terrence D.H., with Van Christensen on drums and B.J. Parker on bass. They released their first full-length album, One, back in June 2008. Actually, I had a chance to review it for Slug back then, and I found it to be really awesome. And their follow-up, the aptly named Two, came out in July 2010, equally good. Danger Hailstorm was also featured on Slug's Death by Salt 3 compilation back in 2008 as well. Since the summer of 2011, the band has only been releasing singles like War in August of that year and their latest from January titled And We'll Fly Again Someday. Today I'm joined by Terrence D.H. Thanks for joining us, Terrence.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Quite an intro, right?
Yeah, that's good. Thanks.
When you hear it all lined up like that, it's
that's good. I'm glad you didn't ask me about the dates. I'd have been like, yeah, 2004?
Oh, this is not like a quiz.
I always blow those.
It could be whatever you want anyways. It's your music, right?
Yeah.
And you've been around in the music scene both locally and nationally for a long while. Where would you place this particular part of your career as a whole?
The final act.
Oh, is it like that?
I guess. One last hurrah.
I didn't mean to imply that that's what we were heading into here, but...
I've kind of been thinking that too, you know. I'm still just trying to do it or whatever. This is, I guess, always it's like my last stab at it or whatever. If this one can't do it, nothing can, so...
And what does do it mean to you? What do you mean by that?
I mean, make it worth my time and make it fun. And a lot of bands start out, it's super fun, but then in the end, like, everybody hates each other and you're tired of touring and the music maybe is not getting better.
But you have an opportunity to do more than just perform on stage. You record a lot of acts, like The Used and Sum 41 and a big band.
Mostly local bands. Like today I recorded the Samuel Smith Band and, you know, I've been doing mostly focusing on local stuff lately.
And how do you organize your projects then?
I mean, I take whatever I can get. I don't really organize them. I'm hungry to record whoever I can. That's what I do for a day job, so I can't always be too picky, but... And there's so many great engineers in town, too, that I got to compete with, so...
There really are. It seems like there's a glut of talent here.
Yeah,
how did that happen?
No, there is. Musically and artistically, there's so many talented people here. It's awesome. A really great music scene again now, I think, too. Like, I went out and saw some bands this weekend for the City Weekly Music Awards, and a lot of great bands. Laser Fang killed it.
And we can assume you like to work with these artists behind the scenes as much as possible. As much as you would in front of the audience, but if you could choose between the two, is there one?
Yeah, you know, I've never really done that where I mix live sound or whatever. It's just never been my thing. I think I might panic and like this feedback would go off and I'd run out of the club, you know, like, I gotta figure it out. And so luckily at my job, I can figure it out and then, you know, fix it. Like, what's his name, Ryan at Urban Lounge this weekend, there was kind of this low-end rumble coming every once in a while, and you know, I was trying to help him figure it out, and it's really stressful, I would imagine, doing live sound and audience members coming up and giving you their two cents of what they think it should sound like. Like, get out of here, dude. You right. know, just drunk people giving you their feedback all night. I don't know that I could handle that, really.
So you like recording with people non-live in that kind of setting. Can you tell us a little bit about your recording process? Do you ever track anything live in the studio? Or?
I try to track everything live. That's the studio I work at, Counterpoint. It's not Counterpoint anymore, but it's still the same facility. The best thing about that facility is it's got different rooms that everybody can perform live at the same time. And if a band's really good and can nail that, it can be done, you know, fairly inexpensively, because most studios are in someone's basement and everybody's got to record, you know, one at a time, and it really takes a lot of the steam out of the recording, you know, to kind of capture that. I joke with it like there's something magic about it, you know, and like I really go for that, to try to capture the magic of a band and what they're used to hearing all together when they practice, you know.
Let's talk a little bit more about your music now. Your new project, Danger Hailstorm, has been consistently creating a unique sound since you came upon it back in 2008. How did you reach that tone?
Well, I started playing in Skull Fuzz with Cash Tolman, and he kind of got me back into some of my roots with the Bad Yodelers and stuff, and we were tuning down again, and that's really where it got me again, and it was fun to really rock again. Magstatic kind of started getting a little poppy and a little wussy and a more mainstream, and I don't know, I kind of just got back into the heavy thing. And there's so much I like and dislike about metal, you know, in general. Like, I was looking at the Decibel magazine while I was waiting for you guys, and there's just such a cheese element of metal bands trying to be tough and holding the ball thing. Like, what is that, you know?
I saw that picture you're talking about. Yes.
So we're just trying to do something that's equally heavy but not so lame, you know?
And you recently started releasing singles instead of albums. How does
partly
that
partly because we just got a new bass player, BJ Parker. Well, it's been a while, but you know, it just seemed easier to tackle one song and go into the studio and really focus on one song. I tend to get a little overwhelmed when I work on my own stuff, and I don't critique it too much, and there's a lot that goes undone, and I kind of make it is what it is, or I'll overdo it and add hand claps every other, you know, chorus or whatever. And so the single just seemed like something to do, and I didn't want to do number three, you know. So
is number three not on the horizon ever?
It might be. No, it is, but I don't know that it'll be called number three. I think we're going to do a couple more singles and then release them as a collective singles, because we have three now with the Bouncer single that we did with Michael Wagner. So, and then we recently just got an additional guitar player, ex-Cave Doll, Zach Mason. So that's kind of slowed us down, so we haven't been playing out yet. So that's why we were about ready to play with our new bass player, but and then we jumped on it and got an additional guitar player. So
will you speak to the recording process of Bouncer? You mentioned working with Michael.
Yeah, the best recording experience I've ever had. He came in and I mean, we learned how he makes a song from beginning to end, and he totally chopped up the song so that we could even barely play it, you know, cutting two bars here and sticking it somewhere else. And it was amazing, just the sounds he got, and going through each thing with like a fine-tooth comb, just really dissecting it, what it needs and what the listener might want to change and such.
You worked with him for about a week, right?
Yeah.
Out in California?
That was here. He came out
here
to Counterpoint.
That's
yeah,
really great.
He did a seminar, and we were the band in the seminar.
That's really
pretty
cool.
Pretty amazing, yeah. I learned more in that week of recording than, you know, I'd learned 15 years prior. Really, I feel like it took my recording level up heaps and mounds.
Now, you can probably explain his impact in the music scene a little bit better than I can for the people at home.
He mixed Ride the Lightning, or Master of Puppets, I guess it was.
Metallica.
Yeah, he's just done tons of great Aussie classic records and some funny stuff, Saxon, and tons of good metal sound. He's known for his guitar sound and the way he records guitar.
Which is a big part of your music.
Yeah,
it's really guitar driven.
That's something I feel like I'm good at as well, but it really helped me understand the basics of it a lot more. I'm fairly self-taught, other than what engineers I've worked with and trained with and stuff, and so he really opened my eyes to a whole new world. And part of it, of mathematics of drums, you know, putting the kick drum and the snare drum out of delaying them and then EQing them so you can't tell they're delayed, but you're tricking your eardrums for a sound and just opening up the drum set, basically. But it's literally a mathematical trick. kind of pathetic that it is, but it makes it sound really good.
Audio engineers, take note, right? Listen to this episode of our podcast. And people can find more on from your band at dangerhailstorm.bandcamp.com, if I'm not mistaken.
I love Bandcamp, yeah.
And how is that? I mean, you've been in the music scene long enough where you've seen it completely change in terms of distribution. How do you think that impacts?
Well, I'm still trying to figure it out. Like, these last singles we just released digitally, and they're selling worldwide, so that's nice. And I'm still myself. I like a handheld piece of art to look at, and I like to see the credits on an album, so that's a little discouraging for me. You know, I'm a music lover, and half the time I find something I like, I really gotta dig deep to find out who recorded it and what label it's on. And so I hate that about digital.
But you can.
I think that'll change in the future.
Yeah, there should be some sort of medium. We're all still figuring this out, right?
Yeah, we're all still figuring it out.
Which is kind of cool, I think.
Yeah. I still go to Raunch and buy records and such, but it's pretty neat having all your favorite music on an iPod that you can take with you.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah.
And when I think of the words a danger hailstorm, I think of a dangerous storm out on the plains of Kansas where I grew up. There was a lot of hail. What does that word, the name, mean to you?
I honestly don't know where it came from. At one point, like, people have always asked me, what does DH stand for? And I kind of always joked with it because I didn't want people hunting me down and calling me and stuff. And that was one of the Terrence Danger Hailstorm was a name is where it came from. And I think Van, when we started jamming, he just said, let's name it Danger Hailstorm. And we did it, you know.
The Vanimal. Which got a track named after him on the second release,
yeah,
which is cool.
No one puts drum solos on their album anymore, but so we did that.
That's great. I really enjoyed that album in the first one. And I'm looking forward to hearing more from you guys.
Cool.
So I want to hear that collection of singles. We're about to play another one of your singles. It's called And We'll Fly Again Someday. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about the recording process for that?
Well, me and Van pretty much went in and mapped it out and recorded. It's kind of unfun when I record myself because I have to record and play, and I get suckered into recording everything in the control room. It's a little bit different on the recording. It's almost more a little Magstatic sounding to me, a little more straightforward, not so metal, or maybe the Stench type sound or whatever, but just really straightforward punk rock song to me, you know, pop punk rock.
That's what I love about your music. It's straightforward and it gets you going.
Yeah.
It's got everything you need.
And I recorded the bass in it, and we had my friend from the Stench tried to record the bass in it, and it just didn't work out. And then the Spell Talk guys hooked me up with BJ Parker, and he's just been a lifesaver. Came in and knocked out the bass in one day, and it's been awesome. Our band's like the best it's ever been. I'm really excited for the future of it.
So here is Danger Hailstorm's latest single, And We'll Fly Again Someday. Thanks, Terrence.
Cool, thank you.
That was Danger Hailstorm's new single, And We'll Fly Again Someday. For more information on Danger Hailstorm, you can search for the band's group page on Facebook or visit them at myspace.com/DangerHailstorm. To download the new single and the rest of the band's library, visit dangerhailstorm.bandcamp.com. Wasatch Community Gardens is a nonprofit organization committed to enriching communities through gardens. Their programs and workshops train people with passions for urban agriculture. WCG has 7 gardens located throughout Salt Lake City and neighboring suburbs, including some chicken roosts. We'll get to that in just a few. We're joined right now by Susan Finlayson. She's the network coordinator for the WCG. She joins us now. Welcome, Susan. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
And you've been gardening for quite some time, right? But recently you took over this position.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been with Wasatch Community Gardens for a couple years, so yeah.
And how long ago did you graduate from UC Davis?
That was back in 2010.
And then you came out here and found the group, and how did you get involved with the series originally?
So there are currently 5 gardens that we manage, so we actually, on those spaces, we have garden plots that people can rent for the year and grow their own garden as part of the community. Basically, we were finding that the wait lists for those plots were growing bigger and bigger every year, and there was just this great demand for space to garden in. So one of the things that, as an organization and a community, we figured that we could do more of is just helping people start more community gardens around the city. So my position was created to essentially do that, help our organization become a more active resource for folks who want to start school gardens and neighborhood gardens and gardens with different nonprofits around the city. So that's what I do.
And you've already filled all the spots for this current training series, and there is a wait list people can get involved in, but this seems to be the most successful year you've had so far. What do you attribute the interest in the series?
Well, it's the second year that we've done it, and both years we've had more applicants than we've been able to fit into the class, unfortunately, but that doesn't mean we have a great group of people going through the program who are involved in garden projects throughout the city. So I think it just reflects on the growing interest and need in our community for space to grow your own food.
And we already mentioned where you went to school. What did you study there, and how does that currently impact your the way you handle this series?
That's interesting, because I studied horticulture, but what I've found with my job is that actually what we do more is a lot around community organizing. You know, learning how to work with plants is one thing, but learning how to work with people is a whole nother ball game. So
that's some on-the-job training you've been getting.
It's definitely an ongoing a learning opportunity for me, but that's what our focus is on this training, really equipping people with the skills that they need to be effective organizers of their projects.
Your community garden classes focus on topics ranging anywhere from cultivating community to team building and money management. It seems pretty varied. How did you create the curriculum for the series?
That's a good question. We looked at other programs that are going on in other cities around the country, and basically kind of gleaned some of those topics. And we also looked to the American Community Gardening Association, which has its own curriculum for community garden leaders. So we really kind of built on the collective experience of a lot of different people.
What are you currently really excited about for this upcoming series that haven't necessarily focused on yet, or something that's getting you going?
There are a couple of things I really enjoy about it every year. One is just getting to know the different folks who go through the training and become part of our network. And the other part is just seeing the gardens get off the ground and be successful. So I'm really looking forward to watching some of the projects grow that come out of this training.
I was following your online presence recently, and I found out you folks have chickens.
We do.
They're called mascots, but they're the only kind of mascots I've ever heard of where you could actually get food from them. How does the chicken element fit into the community gardens story?
Yeah, that's a great question. So another thing that our organization does is providing educational workshops on organic gardening, seasonal cooking. So basically looking at localizing our food sources and empowering people to grow their own food, which in recent years has branched out into urban homesteading and raising chickens and other kinds of animals in your backyard in the city.
Have you ever tried these chickens' eggs? Are they good eggs?
Oh yeah, they're great.
Now, if people can't make it to the series because of the nature of how small the classes are and the wait list and everything like that, how else can they get involved in the
series? Yeah. So we are offering this series on an annual basis. So we'll have another round of applications for it in November. Those will come out. But in the meantime, just educating yourself about some of the resources that we offer on an ongoing basis and some written materials that we have online is a good place to start. So if you just go to wasatchgardens.org and you click on community gardens and start a community garden, you'll see a bunch of lists of resources and an actual handbook on how to start a community garden in Salt Lake. So I always recommend people check out those materials and then contact us if they have follow-up questions about different components of that.
And there's also a volunteer section there. I started filling out the form the other day, so you can encourage people to volunteer and do anything.
Oh, yeah, that's a great point. I should have mentioned that. That's another great way just to get involved. I mean, starting a community garden is a really, really big job, but you can get involved in existing gardens, you can get involved in our gardens, and there's all kinds of volunteer opportunities on our website, too.
And what is the future of community gardening here in Salt Lake City and then throughout the United States?
The future?
Yeah, the future. It's a big question.
With my crystal ball?
Yeah.
That's a good question. If it's anything like the last 5 or even 10 years, we've just seen a huge growth in interest in the idea of urban agriculture and local food, and also an interest in people learning how to garden and how to grow their own food. So, and also just the other benefits of community gardening that have to do with just getting to know your neighbors and getting to know your community and making those connections as well.
Now, I participated in my neighbor's garden collective this year.
Nice.
It was really fun. I had a good time. But I'm sure the plants here are a little bit different than the ones you're used to working with in California. How do they differ, and what do you find grows well here that may not grow there, and vice versa?
Yeah, well, the plants are the same, but the climate is different.
Right.
Well, I think the seasons are a little different in Northern California, where I'm from. We obviously don't have as cold of a winter, although this winter it certainly feels a little different. I think one thing people don't realize here in a mountain state like Utah is that you actually can grow year-round. There are a lot of really neat season-extending and kind of hoop house and greenhouse methods of growing that I think is really fun, and kind of that's a little bit different from California too.
Any final word about this upcoming series or the community gardens in general?
Yeah, I mean, basically if you're interested in getting involved in any of the stuff that we're doing, check out our website, look for volunteer opportunities, and we have 50 organic gardening workshops scheduled for this year that you can sign up for on a piece-by-piece basis, and then again, the training next winter. So we've got a lot going on. Oh, plus our youth programs too. So,
which is where the chickens are from, right?
That's where the chickens live. You can sign your kids up for summer camps at our gardens, and they can hang out with the chickens.
I'm interested in the chickens alone pretty much out of all this. I love fresh eggs, but thanks for all that info, Susan, and we'll see you in the gardens.
All right, thanks.
For more information on events, workshops, volunteer work, youth programs, and other resources we mentioned, visit wasatchgardens.org. It's time once again for one of my favorite weekly segments, actually the only recurring one now that I think about it, the daily weekly calendar rundown with Esther Moronio. She's the editorial assistant here. You do a great job. Thanks for coming back finally, Esther.
JP, it's the weekly daily calendar rundown.
All right, let's agree to disagree. All right. Regardless, you can find it in the back of our paper, the hardcover edition, and online at slugmag.com.
Yes, both places.
And this is a teaser for later. We may or may not have an iPhone app, so stick around through the events section, and we may or may not talk about it. Friday, March 2nd, the first Friday of the month. You want to tell us what's going on?
Yeah, so the first Friday of every month, the Utah Museum of Contemporary Art has a reception for a new exhibit. This Friday, they're going to have an exhibit called Facts. It's pretty awesome event to go to because they have... kind of like a social gathering, you know, you get to check out the art, and usually they also have some refreshments, and it's just a good thing to go to on Friday night
at the UMOCA. Other stuff's going on that day.
Yes.
What are you most excited about that day?
Definitely the new issue of Slug that's going to come out. Any place cool. Or you can check it out online.
Where is someplace cool?
Let's see, some local coffee shops, at your favorite local bar, random places like yoga studios. Yeah, just mostly places that advertise with us in other awesome places.
And happy birthday to Grayson Roy Lance. He's in the marketing staff.
Yep, happy birthday, Grayson.
We always like to give shout-outs to people that contribute. Because they make the magazine go around. Speaking of, the next day, Saturday, March 3rd, happy birthday to Sean Zimmerman Wall.
Yeah, he's one of our main action sports writers and skier, sled games coordinator.
And has one of the best hyphenated last names of anyone on staff. It's a pretty badass name.
Yeah, we usually call him SZW.
Can we call him Z-Dub? Is that too street? Mm-hmm. Just think about it. Just stare, throw it at him.
Yeah,
see what happens.
He's totally cool enough for that name.
And this next event that's happening on Saturday, I'm quite excited about.
I know, me too.
Are you going to be attending?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to try. I love this Utah Symphony, and this Saturday they have a Vivace concert, and we'll be featuring Brahms Symphony No. 1. And it should be pretty good.
The Brahms Symphony is taking place at the Symphony Hall.
Yeah.
You're going to go there?
Yes.
You've got probably a plus one. Do you have your date yet? Let's not talk about it, you know. I'm just asking. I'm just bothering you.
Yeah, I'll take one of my good friends, I'm sure.
That's all you need.
That appreciates the symphony.
And the day after, the Lord's Day, as it were, Sunday. Not really much going on except for, of course, Broovie's movies.
Yeah.
But there is a birthday, a staff birthday.
Yes, happy birthday to Melissa Cohn. She's one of our photographers. So, happy birthday to you.
Do you know what's going on that Sunday at Broovie's on March 4th?
I don't. I imagine that...
This is a test, you being a Broovie's employee and everything.
I imagine that we might be showing The Walking Dead, if there is a show.
That was the test. Yes, they'll be showing
All right. The Walking Dead on Sunday at Broovie's.
True TV.
It's free.
Bill Frost hosts that every Sunday. Whenever those shows are on, he'll be there in the big screen, and he'll be cracking wise. You know how he does.
He's a Broovie's regular.
He definitely is. Should we tell people about the app?
Well, they've been waiting all this time. We might as well.
Yeah, here's the big reveal. Can we get some drums, Gavin? No? Thank you, Esther. We have an iPhone app we tell you about every week. That's still a thing. Recently, though, the podcast, Soundwaves from the Underground, has been added to the app. You can listen to it. You can respond to us through the app. You can call us or email us. We've gone beyond podcasting.
Yes, we have. To iPhone apps. It's the next level.
You make it sound like it's... Yeah, it is the next level. there's some excitement there, Esther. Thank you for recognizing that. It's probably the coolest thing that's ever happened to podcasting, is what I was going to say.
I would say, especially since you can call us directly from there, which I very highly suggest that you do.
The daily calendar is also on that.
Mm-hmm.
You can get all that information, and you can read all our archives and
the current
and the rest
issue
of the magazine. Yeah,
check it out.
Thanks again for joining us, Esther.
Thanks, JP.
Andre Williams is an R&B musician from Alabama whose career started in the late 50s as a songwriter and singer and a major blues musician on Avon, Wingate, and Chess Records in the 60s. His career picked up since then, writing tracks for acts like Stevie Wonder and Ike and Tina Turner, as well as Parliament and Funkadelic. Throughout his career, he's earned many nicknames, most notably Mr. Rhythm, the Emperor of Easy, and of course, the Black Godfather. Williams hit a rough patch during the 80s, but made a comeback in the late 90s with two albums and a signing with Bloodshot Records. Williams has a brand new album out this week called Hoods and Shades, showcasing his skill in folk, rock, psychedelic, and R&B. Here's Slugwriter James Bennett interviewing Williams about the album and touring.
They got rings in their nose.
Tell me a bit about yourself. You know, where'd you grow up? What was your early life like?
Well, I grew up in halfway in Bessemer, Alabama. And then after I got about 11 years old, when I was 6 years old, I moved to Chicago. And that's where I was raised, in Chicago, actually. That's where I went to school.
How big of an influence on your life was the city of Chicago as far as music goes?
Well, Chicago is a city that I never have liked. But I had to get used to it because I had ties here.
Okay. In the time since you've been active more recently, you know, you've played a lot of festivals. You've also played a lot of, you know, kind of smaller city clubs, what they call Bucket of Blood clubs sometimes. Do you prefer one experience over the other?
Well, truthfully, I'm hoping one day I can get a chance to play the big places. But I'm going through the process of rehabilitation and the comeback. So I guess these are the stages that you have to go through in order to reach the better clubs.
Okay.
And to draw more people.
Like I mentioned, I'm calling you here from Salt Lake City, and you know, we had kind of an Andre Williams drought for a while, and then suddenly you kind of showed up, and you've been playing shows here. You played last summer. You played two nights at a place called The Garage. You played the year before that at a place called The Urban Lounge. How did that come to be? How did Salt Lake City suddenly pop up on your radar?
You know, I really do not know how that happened, but I am so glad that it happened, because Salt Lake City is the only place that I've ever played 2 days in a row. Everybody else wouldn't have even dared thinking about playing Andre Williams for 2 days. And Salt Lake City took the chance, and they turned out for me. And that is one place that has just captured my heart.
So you're mentioning, you know, you're not playing very many nights in a row anywhere. You've mentioned that these smaller clubs are kind of like you paying dues. At this point, though, I think you've played plenty of dues. I mean, do you feel like the industry has given you the respect that you've earned, the respect that you deserve?
Well, I'm going to tell you about that. I've been asked that same question. I really don't know what the dues are. I don't know. I really don't know how much or how long do you have to suffer, or how much do you have to pay in order to reach the top. But I know that whatever it takes, I'm willing to do it until I can't do it again.
Talking about your music career, now when you first kind of popped up on my radar, it was, you know, the early 1990s, and you were playing with kind of some more almost punk bands. You were playing with the Demolition Doll Rods, and it was a bit of a kind of a punk garage style that you were singing and performing with. It was a lot less of the R&B and soul music that you were known for up to that point. I guess my question here: how did it happen that you ended up when you kind of made your comeback in the early 90s? What was it about these these punk and garage bands that they got you back out again?
Those were the only people that had faith in me. I mean, the other places wouldn't play me. It's just that simple. But the garage group took on to me and just helped me float all the way. And I just love them to death.
Hoods and chains. Hoods and chains. Hoods and chains. Now you can't tell who they are. It might be your best friend, but buddy, your life might be coming.
Kind of thinking back over some of your work, you know, one of the more famous songs you were involved with was the old kind of almost R&B standard now, "Shake a Tail Feather." Now, a lot of people have played that song over the years, you included. Do you have a favorite version of the song?
I think I like Tina's version and Ray Charles' second. The Blues Brothers third.
Now, what about your own take on the song? What do you think you fix? I've seen you perform it live, so what do you think your version ends up?
I don't think I've done it the best yet.
Okay.
I'm still shooting at it. I'm not satisfied yet.
Now, while we're kind of on the subject here of tail feather, what the hell exactly is a tail feather?
At the time that I started putting that song together, it was "Shake Your Ass." But of course, that wouldn't fly.
Yeah.
At that time, you couldn't use those kind of words in a song. So I had to come up with something that would read the same as "Shake Your Ass." And that's when I put the feather onto the tail, and that's what made it legit.
Now, did kind of this old school censorship, did that form anything else for you? Were other songs written kind of around those rules too?
Well, I think since this new age has come about, I don't have any problem writing exactly how I feel. You know, before they were so censored and so limited, but now I can just be Andre Williams.
Is there a song or a project that you've worked on in the past that you wish that more people knew about?
Oh, that's a very good question. I think in a humorous way, not in a serious way, I think pussies sink and so do marijuana. I think that was a very entertaining song. Now, as far as commercial, thinking in the direction of a commercial, I would think the song that I enjoy the most singing is I Can Tell. And that's a slow ballad, but it's just so soulful and seems like every band that I've played with catches on to that song.
Speaking a bit about, you know, so you say every band that you've played with kind of catches on to that song. Now, you've actually got a couple of new records circulating right now. You've got, was it Nightclub, which just came out with the Gold Stars. You also have Hoods and Shades that's being put out that features a completely different band. Tell me what you can about these two discs, about Hoods and Shades and Nightclub.
Well, Hoods and Shades was not my idea. That was my manager's idea.
Okay.
Skip came up with that because we were planning on doing a video on it.
Okay.
Matter of fact, it's still... in the process of
right.
producing that particular song.
That was Slugwriter James Bennett interviewing Andre Williams about his most recent album and his life. From his latest album, Hoods and Shades, here's Dirt from Andre Williams.
It don't matter how high we go. It don't matter if it's high or low. It don't matter if it's help or hurt. When it all boils down, we just dirt. Don't matter how much cash you got. Believe me, brother, I had a lot. It don't matter if you're straight or gay. It don't matter if you pray every day. It don't matter if you're square or round. You just dirt. And look here. It don't matter if you're thick or thin. It don't matter if you lose or win. It don't matter if you fool around. It don't matter if you're popular in town. When it all comes around, you're just dirt. You're just dirt. You're just dirt. You're just dirt. All you is dirt. You're just dirt. All you is dirt. You're just dirt. All you is dirt.
That was Dirt from Andre Williams and his latest album, Hoods and Shades, which comes out this Tuesday on Bloodshot Records. Williams is going to be kicking off another tour starting March 22nd in Madison, Wisconsin, with a planned visit to Salt Lake City on June 8th and 9th at The Garage, which is on 1199 North Beck Street. For more information on Williams and his more recent discography, check him out at bloodshotrecords.com. Thanks for listening to another edition of Sound Waves from the Underground. We've seen an increase recently in listenership and attention for the series, and we really appreciate that. For all things Slug Magazine, you can visit us online at slugmag.com. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, or anything else you'd like to let us know, email us at soundwaves@slugmag.com, or you can email us via the iPhone app, as we mentioned earlier, or call us at 858-233-9324 on our automated voicemail line. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan, with associate producers Jeanette D. Moses, Ricky Vigil, Esther Moronio, and Jonathan Paxton. Our executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis, with our main logo and art designed by T. Doan and technical design by Kate O'Connor. Next week is set to be another good show with Plan B Theater's The Third Crossing. We'll be checking in with Jeffrey Stedman from Yelp and find out what Yelpers are saying about Dim Sum in town. We'll learn about Logitech Ultimate Ears and about Move to Amend.